Welcome back to the Book of James. Chapter 3 is a little chapter that I like to call, So You Think You Can Teach. This one is for every one of us who thinks we're ready to teach everyone else what we know. Doesn't matter if it's a pulpit, a post on socials, or a personal soapbox. Anytime you think you should teach them, this chapter is for you. Remember, James already told us to be swift to listen and slow to speak. That's a hint, but teaching is another level entirely. Y'all ready for it? Verse 1. Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. Now, as someone who teaches regularly, verse 1 is sobering. Whatever you teach, God will judge strictly. And that's serious because, verse 2, we all stumble in many ways. Let that little nugget encourage you. We're human. We all screw up. I am very human. I screw up a lot. It's life. And I think James is a little sarcastic when he says, anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect. I think he's talking here to all of us in that moment when we're so sure we're right that we have to teach everyone else. Reality check. You're not perfect, and you will make mistakes, especially with words. If you teach those words, you'll be held responsible. He's not saying be quiet, he's saying be careful. And to put the danger in full perspective, James gives us a series of analogies and metaphors for one of the most dangerous weapons known to man, the tongue. First metaphor in verse 3. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Put that picture in perspective. A horse is about 1,000 pounds and all muscle. A horse can pull 3,000 pounds on wheels. The record? 58,000 pounds. The record pull for one horse? 58,000 pounds. The bit in a horse's mouth weighs 2 pounds. And it can steer the whole thing. James makes the same analogy for a ship and its rudder. An unimpressive little rudder can steer a great big ship through powerful winds. What's the lesson? Verse 5. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. So that's the danger. A weapon you keep in your own mouth, the tongue. You wouldn't think such a delicate little thing could do much damage. But your tongue is the horse's bit that directs your life. The words you say are the rudder that moves the whole ship, on course or off. Have you ever said just one stupid thing that ruined everything? Stinking tongue. Look what you made me do. Back in verse 5, consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. Now there's a sobering picture. One little spark can destroy a forest. James says, the tongue is a fire. Now, fire is amazing. Fire is phenomenally useful and powerful when properly contained. Words are powerful. Words express ideas, affections, insights. Words create worlds, but reckless words can burn everything. Social media is a perfect example. Have you ever been all fired up by the latest controversy and you just want to speak your mind? So you drop your opinion on socials, then realize you just dropped a lit match on a tinderbox. Worse yet, some of us don't realize because we don't see the people on the other side. We just light the match, close the app, and walk away while the world burns. Wherever it is you feel compelled to share your words, take verse 6 to heart. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. Wow. Picture a long fuse to light some fireworks. The fuse starts with a match lit up by hell itself. And the fireworks at the end of that fuse are the words that you're itching to speak. Words are dangerous. So many of the great wars in our personal relationships start with words. The tongue. I knew you were trouble, but this is serious. James compares the tongue to a wild animal. Mankind has tamed and trained horses, dogs, beasts of all kinds, but your tongue cannot be tamed or enchanted. In verse 8, it is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Ever thought about that? The hypocrisy of praising God and insulting those made in God's image? James says that one mouth should be consistent. Verse 11, can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? Can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? The idea here is that the roots determine the fruit. According to Jesus, the mouth speaks from the overflow of the heart. Anyone can fake it in church for a couple hours, even in the pulpit. But watch their words when their guard is down, and watch yours. If you hear anger and malice in your words, don't just filter the tap, fix the source. The final third of the chapter is dedicated to one topic, wisdom, and it is my favorite passage in the whole book. Wisdom has many nuances of meaning, knowledge and skill in a given field, or keen ability to solve tough problems. Here, wisdom refers to the ability to give sage advice. Makes for a good teacher. But how do you know who is wise, or if I'm wise enough to teach? Verse 13, who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. Powerful verse. Don't prove your wisdom with your sermon. Prove it with your service. Show it. Live your life with goodness, with deeds done, watch the words, in humility, because real wisdom breeds humility. Hold on, then why do all the wise people seem so arrogant? Because those aren't wise people. Wisdom is not the classic know-it-all hero you might expect, more of an anti-hero, the one who fully recognizes, it's me, I'm the problem. That's called humility. Read Proverbs. Wisdom loves correction. Folly is wise in its own eyes. Give that arrogance a pulpit, and you're in danger. Look at verse 14. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts... Pause there. That bitter envy belongs to the wise man who thinks wisdom is a contest. Smartest argument wins. When someone else is smarter, you get bitter. The selfish ambition belongs to the one who wants to teach, who wants to say smart things to be heard. When someone else says them, envy. But arrogance is not God's style, and in the pulpit, it is bound to create bad blood in the church. If you want to teach the Bible, then let go of your ego and let it know we are never, ever getting back together. If you want to teach the Bible, then let go of your ego, and you tell it, we are never, ever getting back together. And James explains that there are two kinds of wisdom, that kind with envy and ambition. Verse 15 says, such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. We call it worldly wisdom, but why demonic? Because a bigger ego is just a bigger target for the accuser of your souls. The devil would love to take full advantage of how wise you think you are. And what starts with envy and selfish ambition, James says, will lead to disorder and every evil practice. This is why you never trust pride in a pulpit. We know the story all too well. Outstanding teacher, huge audience, then suddenly the fall. A little investigation reveals just that. Disorder and every evil practice. But were there signs? How could we have known? The signs are arrogance, envy, self-promotion, the devil's calling cards. Bible teachers, if you see those in the mirror too often, get out of the pulpit. If you don't see them at all, take your blinders off. But I love verse 17. James lays out the calling cards of godly wisdom. So let's break it down. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure. Godly wisdom is clean. It's pure. No greed, no hiding ulterior motives. Then, peace-loving. True wisdom isn't picking a fight. No verbal match-dropping either. It loves peace. Considerate wisdom thinks about others. It slows down to make sure it's lighting a candle, not a powder keg. Submissive. This one will separate the men from the boys. Real wisdom submits. It yields, gives in. Some of us would rather win arguments than win friends. More interested in scoring points than loving our family. Wisdom recognizes when the stakes are not worth the argument. Full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Wisdom chooses no favorite and holds no facade. And the proof is in the fruit. Good comes from it. Verse 18 closes the chapter with a picture of what good teaching and good wisdom should look like. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. Read James 3, and if that last verse describes you, please teach us, and I'll see you next time.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.